Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Budiwa Gavaza, and for today, we talk about an industry that South Africa has become, you know, renowned for on the global stage, and that is BPO. In technical terms, they call it business process outsourcing, but in many instances, it tends to be, you know, associated, you know, with call centers, with customer care, customer queries, and that type of thing. And South Africa has become a country that has become quite renowned for servicing a number of global businesses from SA, especially those that are English speaking, you know, have found favor with South Africa. And we saw, especially during COVID, South Africa really taking its place on the global stage, together with the other countries, you know, like your Indias, like the Philippines, in this particular industry. So for today specifically, we are chatting with the team from CCI Global, and joining me is Mittam Singh, who is the Chief Services Officer for CCI South Africa. And we're just going to get a sense of how business is on their end, but also at the same time, you know, some of the developments that they are seeing when it comes to, you know, technology in his space. Mittam, greetings to you today.
Good morning. Thank you, Madiwa, and good morning to your listeners.
Okay, so let's begin, you know, with around BPO. You heard me doing my best to try and define, you know, business process outsourcing. So maybe you could give us a sense of, you know, from a CCI point of view, where is CCI playing when it comes to BPO services? CCI South Africa, where are you playing? What are the services that are being offered? What's the elevator pitch?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, Madiwa, and appreciate the opportunity to chat to yourself and the listeners today. Let me start at a macro level as to where the industry is at. Currently, within the South African kind of space, there's about 270,000 individuals in the space, and you know, we compete globally as an industry, and South Africa as an industry globally with the likes of India, Philippines, you know, Guatemala, etc. And if we then hone in into South Africa, you know, there's some large expectations on the industry just based on where we kind of see it going between now and 2030, with an expected growth of anywhere between 250,000 to 270,000 jobs between now and then. So let's call it just over 500,000 jobs as a targeted date, targeted number for 2030. The expectation is that the industry will be probably worth 3.6 billion US by 2027. If we then take that and hone that into CCI South Africa, CCI South Africa was established probably about 20 years back as an organization, started out as a 50-seater sales organization, and today boasts just over 12,000 employees, employing predominantly you know, unemployed youth from in and around the areas that they operate within. Within South Africa specifically, there's sites out of Johannesburg, KZN specifically as the head office, or the local head office, and then into Cape Town, offering services of inbound, outbound sales and service, back office, as well as some form of, you know, chat, web chat, app chat, application support to large organizations in the US, blue chip organizations in the US, the UK, as well as Australia, and then a couple of financial services businesses in South Africa.
When it comes to, you know, that's a big number that you spoke about just now. From where you began, you said starting off with about 50, you know, seats in the country to, you know, 12,000. That's actually a lot. What are the industries that CCI is, you know, servicing out of SA, and where are the businesses based? I guess I'm trying to understand, you know, the type of clients that CCI is able to service from South Africa and what the strengths of South Africa are when it comes to winning some of this business.
Yeah, fantastic. So let me just clarify that 50 to 12,000. The 12,000 is across Africa. SA is just over 6,500 resources. And that number fluctuates through the year based on seasonality. But we based out of South Africa with that 6,500, 7,000, and then into Rwanda, Ghana, Ethiopia, Egypt as well, and then more recently starting to get Botswana kind of set up. But if we bring it back to South Africa, the organizations that we would be dealing with and the sectors that we would be dealing with is what we would term internally travel and leisure. So these are large airlines, that would commute either locally in the US or internationally and globally from an airline perspective, then into retail, large retail organizations, either e-commerce or brick and mortar kind of organizations that utilize our services. And these could be query types that range from where's my delivery to actually placing orders with us in the center. And then we move on to financial services. So these are large insurance houses, banks, that would be utilizing services, both coming out of the US and the UK. And then specifically in telecommunication. So these are large telcos, blue chip telcos. And there we do, a variety of things from, prepaid and postpaid support to technical inquiries. And you're actually doing formal troubleshooting with organizations or individuals over the phone. So that's an industry kind of breakup and makeup, that comes with. Why South Africa? I think one, our English proficiency, I think, is a big component and aspect of why we are attracted. Our accent from a English neutrality perspective just makes it easier to operate. I think the low barrier of entry to get into a contact center. Or the BPO space, I think would be a second piece. And what does that actually mean, Modiwa? Is the fact that you can take a 19-year-old that's come out of school that maybe doesn't have the opportunity to go to tertiary education for financial reasons, and we would set them up with the basic computer literacy skills, right through to product and systems training, and then give them a period of 12 months, 24 months as working experience before they can explore other opportunities within the business or then in the larger industry.
Because of the factors that you've just spoken about now, one of the things I was quite curious to get an understanding from you, Mittem, is to say, when you are servicing a client, let's say a client out of the US, let's say one of the mobile operators out of the US, and you're providing some of the, prepaid, support and all of that stuff, right? What are the economics that are there? I guess you don't have to tell, it would be nice, to get a sense of, what the revenues are like. But what I'm more interested in is how, those charges happen. Is it about the number of people that are employed, for a specific client? Is it about the number of queries that come in, around a specific client? How do those, factors work now when some of these agreements are being put into place?
Yeah, fantastic. So I think just from a commercial modeling perspective, the industry has got a few models that we kind of work with. So let's take large telco in the US, where there's high volume. So take something like prepaid, where there'll be high volume on number of customers that would call you. And generally, you would kind of apply what we would term a cost per call. So Maliwa, we charge per call answered at a specific handle time. So we've got a certain amount of time to handle a particular call or query type. So let's assume for a minute that was 5 minutes. We would charge that particular customer or client of ours for that 5-minute duration at a set price. For that. That's one example. Another would be what we would term a productive hour model. So the client says, we've got X number of hours for you to fulfill on. Can you fulfill, this amount of workload in that amount of productive hours? So let's just call that 100,000 hours. We would then charge per hour for that work to be completed for the 100,000 for that particular month. Then you've got more an older model, which still exists in the industry, which is a cost per seat. And you would pay then, for that particular seat. That seat would include all aspects from human resources to facilities to IT infrastructure, etc. That would sit on that particular piece. And just to give you an idea, those numbers, and it's a broad speaking, it's not necessarily only a CCI kind of number, but those numbers kind of broadly speak about anywhere between 15 to 30,000 rand per seat. And in some instances where you're looking for, top end service, those numbers can range 30K plus, in those particular instances. And then you can range on a cost per call anywhere from, $5 to $6 up to $22 a call. Again, depending on the level of service that's required or the segment that you're kind of servicing. So let's assume you've got a platinum client or a client has got a platinum customer. That customer, expects service within 5 seconds of ringing or 10 seconds of ringing. Those will increase that particular piece of that particular price. And then you think about skill set, and including skill set into that number. You're looking for somebody that's got some level of IT capability, that's doing IT troubleshooting. That comes at a price. So therefore, that you'll build that into the overall price. I hope that kind of answers that one.
No, it definitely does. And I like, the fact how comprehensive you went, with some of the models that are there, because it gives us a sense of what's happening in the space and also some of the reasons that are there. Can I confirm, because this is the common, the common conception, and I'm trying to get a sense of whether that is the reality on the ground. The common conception is that a lot of these services tend to be farmed out to countries like South Africa, India. We spoke about the Philippines earlier on because of the reasons that you spoke about earlier on, proficiency, all of that stuff. But how does the cost compare, servicing, if a mobile operators service is doing their customer service out of South Africa versus doing it out of the US? And I ask that because we are talking in a moment where, comparative advantage. In economics, we talk about comparative advantage. How much does it cost to do a certain thing in a particular country versus another country is top of mind right now with all of this tariff speak that is around the world. So would be curious to understand how South Africa compares when it comes to, it obviously would be financially attractive, but keen to get a sense of, what it looks like.
Yeah, perfect. At the headline level, you probably look to take off 25 to 30% of your operating expenditure by outsourcing your services immediately. Whether that's, local or whether that's international, that number gets bigger, can go up to 50% in some instances. Now that's the headline. If we go into, into a bit of detail, and I'll give you two perspectives, one from a financial point of view, but also two in terms of appetite, within these those countries onshore, let's say in the US. So if we take it from an economical perspective, first and foremost, your starting point and your salary start point as a minimum wage point of view or minimum salary in the US or Canada, et cetera, can range anywhere between 450 to 500,000 rand per individual. And that's just on the labor side of things. So with that being said, you're already on the front foot as a country, with potentially, our, starting salaries or entry-level salaries and minimum wage salaries are different, to that in these organizations. So already, you're on the front foot as a country. I think over and above that, you think about real estate and the cost of real estate in some of these countries, and that then plays a big part in it. Versus, you know, in SA, if you were to do it, you're getting it at anywhere from, you know, 55 rand a square meter, you know, ranging up to, you know, top end 300-350 rand a square meter, you know, so. And there, just as a understanding for your audience, you would kind of need anywhere between 8 to 10 square meters, just based on health and safety capabilities, etc. So now, you know, you're starting to really build out a model that's, you know, built economically for these organizations. And I guess with the change in technology and the technology landscape, with, you know, undersea cables, you know, running, you know, between continents, makes it easier and cheaper for us to kind of to do that out here. So that's the second thing. I think then coming to the appetite piece, you know, I was in an Uber in San Francisco probably about 5-6 months back, and the Uber driver said to me, you know, where do you come from? And I said, oh, out of South Africa, and, you know, this is what I'm doing in country. And she said to me, you know, I've got so many individuals that either Uber with me or family or friends that would never work in a call center because they don't see it as a, you know, as a career, or it's too tough, you know, in terms of complexity. And just again, for audiences, you know, from a stress level perspective and an anxiety perspective, call centers are regarded as the second most stressful job, you know, in the world. That's outside of air traffic control. So you know, there's two perspectives as to why, you know, why these organizations will come to us.
Firstly, I did not know that stat. That's actually quite an interesting stat, that it's the second most stressful job in the world. I can imagine that interacting with all of these different people, the different needs, all of that stuff would take you know, a little bit of a toll, you know. So that's quite an interesting stat. And then, you know, good to understand, you know, some of the cost drivers, you know, the labor aspect, the property aspect, and then, you know, some of the mentalities, you know, that are there, you know, what people take as acceptable or not acceptable work, and that. But in that, one of the things that I'm also curious about is, in the same way that South Africa has become a hub for BPO services, do you find that South African organization, to whatever extent you've been able to do this type of research, are South African corporates primarily doing their own customer service out of SA, or do some corporates in South Africa still want to maybe drive some of their own support out of other countries? Because the capability is there locally, I guess I'm just trying to understand whether having the capability locally guarantees that corporates in South Africa will be making use of that capability locally.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's a great question, because I think it's quite a continuous debate, or probably over the last sort of 5 years, around local corporates and large corporates. Let's take the large banks. I would guess that right now, anywhere between 75-80% still do that as captive contact centers. So they keep it within their space, and they run it themselves. And there, you know, there you talk about the economics of that particular piece and commercial models. Because they've got to pay internal corporate taxes, you know, that number can range anywhere between 40,000 rand per seat to 90,000 rand per seat. You know, so if you take what I shared earlier, you know, where that seat would range anywhere between 15,000 to 30,000, you already got an economical benefit by outsourcing that, you know, to an outsourcing provider or a BPO provider like ourselves. However, I think these organizations choose to do this so they can kind of manage the security aspects, you know, around things like cybersecurity, et cetera. And that doesn't mean that we don't. We absolutely do that. And we've probably got either similar or better standards than some of these organizations. However, they tend to keep it locally, you know, 90 to 95% that do outsource, you know, would keep it locally. Now, let me again clarify that. I said earlier that 75 to 80% of these organizations would keep it captive and run their centers captively. Those that do outsource, 95% of them keep that piece. So that 20% that's remaining, 95% of them caps locally. The remainder, where they're part of a large conglomerate, that's operating globally and have already got centers that are established. Let's call it in India as an example. They would outsource that, to their Indian counterparts. But that's still an insource model, so they're still insourcing that within the large conglomerate or within the group of companies.
All right. Makes sense how they would do some of those arrangements, because I think sometimes when we talk about this PPO space, we almost take it for granted that because that capability exists locally, that local corporates will take advantage of it, whether it's internally or outsourcing to some of the local providers. So delineating between whether a person is operating purely out of SA, whether they are multinational, foreign based and all that, that certainly helps us to understand how things are happening there. Now, Mittam, I want to switch a little bit, to talk about the technology piece around this. Subsea cables, a lot of your communications infrastructure has certainly made the ability to make a call in the US and it, being almost instantly picked up in South Africa, making it seem as if someone is answering you in the US. We keep using the US example, but, that's just where we are. But I wanted to turn to the other, piece of technology that a lot of people seem to be using now, which is AI. That is one of the big buzzwords in the space right now, artificial intelligence. How has that shaped or influenced investment, in your space as CCI?
Yeah, again, a great question. So let's just take, artificial intelligence or AI, I think, as the first and foremost thing. If we just look at some of the research that's been produced over this last period of time, only 12% of organizations indicate that there's a demand for AI within contact centers and BPO. 59% believe that it's a strategic priority. And then only 12% see the importance or future importance of AI. However, coming back to the question of how is it shaped some of the business and industry is, largely high volume, low complexity capability is being utilized or AI is being utilized for that. Now, let's take as an example of the most basic thing of a balance inquiry, of what's my municipal bill, for today, what's my statement, what am I in for at the end of this month on my mobile. That can be kind of driven from an AI perspective, where there's a prompt that automatically, through with a combination of RPA services, kind of delivers that to you. So if I was somebody calling a contact center, and if I take my banking days, and I spent about 11 years in the banking industry, in the contact center specifically, we would, at between the 25th of the month and the 2nd of the month, literally be falling over in terms of call volume or email support that would come in because somebody is phoning, to make a payment of, X to five or six different people. And let's take a small, as an example, a small farmer out in one of the rural areas that's paying, general workers within the farming space and has got to pay 10 people. And they got to do that every month. So they don't have a payroll system. They're not large enough for a payroll system and they do it themselves, phoning in, dialing in, saying, I've got to pay somebody 15, 20,000 Rand. And you then put those transactions through via the telephone. With the change in technology, that now can be done through an AI process or a robotic process automation piece that the individual doesn't have to do that, is to just kind of click one box and saying, yep, happy, all takes place. And now it becomes either a future date payment, through that process, or through the AI capability. I think is the one example. However, I think with that being said, I think, you know, organizations out there based on what I've kind of experienced is I have not yet matured enough from a process point of view. So their processes are not, you know, strong enough for AI at the moment. They're not robust enough for AI. So putting, you know, AI, and you know this, you put AI on a bad process, you still have a bad process. Your AI is going to fail because the process is bad. And I think then with that being said, you know, if you look at in specifically in the contact center industry and BPO, something like quality assurance, where we're doing compliance monitoring and compliance monitoring saying, well, you know, I've authenticated when you were through his ID number, you know, now can be done through voice analytics, you know, and we can see how many times and how accurate we've done that. Now you can do that at scale. So where you're doing at the moment, anywhere between 1% and 5% of call volume through a human, you now can do, you know, between 95% and 100% of that volume through AI capability.
All right. That's actually an interesting one, especially where you began with some of those data points around the demand for AI in the BPO space versus it being seen as something that is strategic, and then ending, and then that last point at the end about the processes. It's actually interesting because we spoke to an organization recently, I believe it was IOKO, and they were talking about IOKO, formerly EOH, and they're using an element of AI to help with their recruitment process. And we spoke to one of the analytics executives, and she literally said exactly what you said, to say a lot of, but she phrased it as a lot of corporates or a lot of businesses are ready or think they're ready for AI, but their data is not, you know, which speaks to, you know, some of the processes, it speaks to some of the data, you know, that exists there. And you could marry those two points to say, some organizations just don't have their data in the right format or done in the right way for them to take advantage of AI. And in another instance, you could marry that with the process, you know, point that you've just made, to say you might, as an organization, want to take advantage of the AI, but if your processes aren't good, you know, then you're just almost exacerbating and recreating a bad thing, but just in digital form.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, further to that, you know, talking about it from a data analytics perspective, but also from a customer experience point of view, you know, the worst thing would happen is if you kind of force this on your customers and you know, impact your customer experience. So just to give you an idea, you know, if my dad is 78 years of age, and you know, if tomorrow you had to say to him, you know, you've got to use some form of digital platform to tap, you know, your card, because this thing is available, you know, and it'll do X, Y, and Z, you know, for you. And that technology is available. We use it every day. You and I use it every day. But my dad is still looking to you know, withdraw money out of the wall, called an ATM. And on the other end of the spectrum, you know, you got my 19-year-old daughter, as an example, when you say to make a reservation at a restaurant for this weekend, she's saying, Dad, I'm not calling anybody. I'm going to find some sort of platform to do that in. Now, you know, exacerbate that with, or try and drive that through some form of AI by forcing those individuals to use your technology rather than meeting them in the channel of choice. And what do I mean by channel of choice? My daughter's channel of choice would be to use some sort of digital platform. My dad's channel would be to use some sort of brick and mortar. You know, so you got to kind of work the balance between those two. But then I bring it back to, you know, bring it back to the data analytics side of things. And, you know, it's believed, you know, over the next period of time, the shortage of skill from an industry point of view, 75% of organizations will need data analysts and data analytic capability. You know, yet today, organizations are saying only 41% have got an immediate need for it, and 29% believe that there's a strategic priority in data analytics. Now, you know, if you had the data of, you know, many, many 19-year-olds and many, many 75, 78-year-olds, imagine how much richer you are, you know, you would be to then enable your AI capability. you know. So yeah, there's a perspective on kind of what you kind of spoke about there.
Where I want us to end off the discussion, Mitam, is maybe an amalgamation of all the points that we've just raised around AI. And I wanted to bring something up that you made mention of earlier on, where you were talking about how banks, for example, in South Africa, you know, at least 80% of their customer service or call center staff is internal. And, you know, they'd rather, you know, have their own facilities, own internal capabilities when it comes to that. When it comes to an outsource provider like CCI, is there an opportunity to also get into provisioning, you know, these types of AI services on a third-party basis to clients, whether they're banks, airlines, mobile operators, and others? Or is that a model that only works, you know, from a human point of view? And I ask that because up until now, everyone that I've spoken to who's making use of AI of some sort as part of their customer service offering seems to be developing it in-house. So is that a play that you see only working, you know, as an in-house play, or do you see an opportunity for, you know, the likes of yourselves to also play, you know, in that space of provisioning some of these AI systems on a third-party basis for customers and clients?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, another great question. And yeah, I think, you know, there's absolutely a play. And I think if there wouldn't be or there wasn't a play, I think, you know, we could become obsolete, you know, really quickly. Now, I don't think, you know, voice as in its old traditional, let me pick up a call, a phone and call somebody, is going to die. You know, there was talks in 2015 that call centers, and just hear my verbiage, call centers are dead, you know, and then kind of transformed and morphed into contact centers because now, brought in other omnichannel capabilities, and omnichannel meaning voice, you know, some sort of chat, some sort of digital platform, a level of AI, you know, et cetera, that would then be included in that self-service, et cetera. And you know, if you fast forward, there's absolutely going to be a need for us to drive those aspects from a delivery perspective, that we almost provision some of those capability on behalf of those organizations. And I'll take the one I used earlier. You take speech analytics. You know, you think about a bank today that maybe is dealing with, you know, 5 million calls on a monthly basis. Whether that's, you know, a general inquiry or a home loan inquiry or a statement inquiry, or actually, I need to do some form of troubleshooting where some of these banks have moved into the technology space around offering, you know, mobile phones and data packages, et cetera. And you now got to do some sort of troubleshooting for them. So just think about that 5 million calls for a human to filter through 5 million, you know, is not humanly possible. So therefore, employ an AI capability on behalf of that. So the industry is morphing into a level of hybrid, or has already reached a level of hybrid capability where they, you know, fulfilling full end-to-end services on behalf of that organization, or they're fulfilling, you know, maybe tier one and tier two pieces, and, you know, will probably morph into 3, 4, 5, and 6 down the line of providing that. So that's the, you know, second piece. And then just maybe some level of data, you know, a data point kind of back, back that, you know, from an industry point of view. You know, if you think about the future skills required, you know, within the space, cybersecurity analysts, as an example, at an entry level organizations, 40% of organizations will probably require that. You know, digital customer experience agents, 30% of organizations are going to require, you know, a digital customer experience agent. And then the final piece, you know, between sort of 15 and 20% will require some sort of robotic automation assistant. To support. And that's at an entry level. At the managerial level, it's about automation process managers, and digital strategy managers. So how do I help you, transform your digital strategy, and then data strategy managers that support just data components, because if you're, to your point earlier, if your data is not structured well enough, you can't go down this path of automating. Forget the fact that I'll hand it over to somebody to do it on my behalf and on behalf of my customer.
All right. On that note, on that futuristic and artificially intelligent note, that's where we round up today's discussion. It's really been interesting to get a sense of what's happening in that BPO space, what people refer to as business process outsourcing. And a big part of that is obviously the call center function that is there, getting a sense of what's happening in the space. We ended off talking about how AI is shaping that particular space, because we're seeing more and more businesses that are trying to employ artificial intelligence in their customer services offerings or operations. But something that Mittem is helping us to understand is that a lot of that is dependent on how good the data is, being fed into some of those systems, and then secondly, the processes that are actually underpinning all of that. How good is that foundation before you can actually invest in some of that technology? He was also giving us a sense to say that there is a play, for some of the for the outsourcing industry to make use of AI and to also play in that space. It's not the preserve of organizations to have their own internal tools. He says that there is a big play, for the outsourcing industry, to get involved in that space, to consult with organizations, to help them, to structure, their offerings in a better way. And also getting a sense of right now where the actual demand lies, because you'd think that everyone and their cat is jumping onto the AI bandwagon when it comes to call centers, because those are some of the jobs that had immediately been seen as this is the danger zone where the technology is going to take over the human aspect. But, Mittem just giving us some data points to actually say, no, the human is still a crucial piece of the process and will continue to be so. As long as a person still wants to make a call and hear a human being on the other side, that will continue to be there. And some of the data around demand from executives and businesses saying that they still value the human interaction. Beginning the conversation, talking about the place of South Africa as a BPO center, what is attracting a lot of international businesses to South Africa. A lot of it has to do with, culture, English proficiency. We got into the nitty-gritties around some of the cost considerations when it comes to labor, when it comes to real estate. And I think off the bat, he was telling us that you can shave off, at least 20% just by the process of outsourcing. And when you move into certain international markets, that can even go up to 50%. And over time, we're going to see, some of those, economics develop. So that's been it. We were in conversation, just talking to Mittem, just around what's happening in his space. And he is from CCI, representing CCI South Africa. And that's been it. Mittem, thank you so much for being with us today.
Diwa, thank you so much and appreciate your time today.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.